Welcome, and thank you for joining today's teleconference Market Surveillance Committee Opinion Call. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Benjamin Hobbs, Chair of the Market Surveillance Committee member. Benjamin, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. Welcome, everybody, to our meeting this afternoon. The main agenda item is to consider the possible adoption of the draft opinion we posted yesterday morning on system market power mitigation. Before we start, let me introduce the folks who are around the virtual room. So with me are the other two members of the Market Surveillance Committee, Drs. Scott Harvey and Jim Bushnell. And in addition, from the ISO, we have ISO staff Perry Savidio, Brad Cooper, Greg Cook, and Sammy Davis. Before we start with a summary of the opinion, as usual, I'll give the statement that although we very much welcome feedback on these very important issues, we are not running a public participation process. So if we have not or do not respond fully to your concerns in writing or otherwise, I apologize, but we're not set up to do that, but we will have as full a discussion as we can within the confines of this hour call. So we always start with a public comment period on any issue. If you want to comment on system market power mitigation, if I could ask you to wait until after we've said our piece, but if there are other issues that anybody would like to raise at this time or any questions, operator, could you invite people to get on the line to ask a question or make a comment?
If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please dial #2 on your telephone keypad at this time. All right, we are not having any callers queuing up at this time.
Okay, thank you very much. So this afternoon I'll give a brief introduction and a very high-level summary of our conclusions, and then Dr. Bushnell will provide some more background on the reasons for those conclusions, as well as perhaps some discussion of market power mitigation in general. And Dr. Harvey will also comment on the issues that need to be addressed in at least the first phase of this proceeding that is proposed to be initiated. And he may also discuss some of the details of Appendix A, which is a review of the hours in 2018 where the potential exercise of market power was identified in the California ISO day-ahead markets. But just to give you a high-level summary, we were asked to comment on the proposal to start a stakeholding proceeding to consider possible implementation of mitigation system-level market power. This proposed proceeding follows on the heels of a set of analyses that the ISO and the Department of Market Monitoring undertook that identified hours during 2018 where the day-ahead market, anyway, exhibited structural conditions that could allow the exercise of market power. And these studies also indicated that system-wide market power could become more of a potential problem in the future as supply conditions in the ISO markets tighten due to the planned retirement of once-through-cooled generating units, as well as other developments. So we've reviewed those analyses of those particular hours, and the details are in Dr. Harvey's Appendix A and are summarized in the body of the opinion itself. And although there are many hours in which the three pivotal supplier tests was failed, we did not perceive frequent or extensive exercise system-wide market power. And so if the conditions prevailing in 2018 continued, there would be little reason, in our opinion, for development of a design for system-level market power mitigation. But there's growing concern that conditions are changing. And in addition, we do note that California presently operates under less stringent mitigation criteria than other balancing area authorities in the EIM in respect to the application of market power mitigation when the balancing area as a whole is transmission constrained. So given the possible changes in market conditions and as well as what might be viewed as a more lenient a market power mitigation system for the system as a whole than other BAs, it seems reasonable that a place to start is to look at developing mitigation protocols similar to those applied outside of California EIM with respect to constraints in import supply. So in general, we support the idea of a stakeholder proceeding that would further refine the details of system level market power mitigation and following three principles that we support. One is that it should start with the real-time market and not extend it to the day-ahead market, even though real-time market power mitigation may not be entirely effective in mitigating day-ahead market power. It will have some impact, and it's just going to be plain easier to implement it quickly and a lot less complicated. There is envisioned to be follow-up phases to phase one where extension to the day ahead might be considered. In addition, the other two principles, which we also support, and Jim will discuss the reasons for this a bit further, as will Scott perhaps, we believe that system level mitigation should be limited to resources within the California ISO footprint, and furthermore, mitigation should be limited to those periods where the California ISO is import constrained due to transmission limitations for a variety of reasons spelled out in this 47-page opinion. And by the way, congratulations to those of you who actually read it over the last 24 hours. We figured at 2 pages per hour and one potty break, you got through the entire thing. That's without sleeping, and thank you. So at this point, I'm going to pass the mic over to Jim for any comments you might want to make.
Okay. Actually, Ben covered a lot of the aspects I was going to cover. I'll just fill in a few or repeat a few things. I was going to just try to summarize the recommendations. First, I think one thing to highlight of all of the extensive analysis in the appendix and really the analysis done by both CAISO staff and DMM, there's a lot there. There's a lot of different interpretations or definitions of how to measure, for example, the structural conditions, the RSI 3 and the day-ahead market, a bunch of different cuts of that. And one thing I wanted to highlight was that although those structural measures are measures, as Ben said, of the sort of potential conditions in which you might worry about the market power, they're not evidence of market power. The closest thing we have to a ex post sort of analysis of market power are the what I'll call the competitive benchmark sort of analyses that DMM has performed, and we looked through those as well. And one thing to point out is that although there's a lot of hours, or in most of the hours in which the competitive benchmark finds relatively large markups, there's about 20 of those. That in most of those hours, the RSI is indicating a structural problem, but there's a lot of other hours in which the RSI 3 also was below 1 and indicated structural problems in which the competitive benchmark did not find nearly so large or any markups as well. And this is kind of one thing that I think we'll have to keep revisiting as we go through this process is balancing the sort of false positive risks of a mitigation trigger against the benefits of mitigation when the risk of market power is really significant. And I think that is a point of evidence that we'll keep thinking about, and I'll come back to when we talk about transmission. So as Ben said, we do support a stakeholder process. If you know that I think there is this reality that at least in some dimensions you could say that the EIM entities are subject to a form of mitigation that the CAISO is not, if they're import constrained into the entire system, and at a very minimum sort of trying to reconcile those designs with each other seems to make a lot of sense. And at a high level, it seems like what the CAISO has posed, at least as a framework, is consistent with that. As Ben said, there were sort of there's a lot of design elements. One of the things that sort of we and I think a lot of other stakeholders have had to confront as we started to think about system market power is there are a lot of issues to consider. Some of them, frankly, are issues that, you know, that existed with the LMPM framework as well, but the consequences are more robust and larger here, and so they warrant revisiting a lot of those aspects. Three of those aspects, which were kind of key, as Ben described, principles of the proposed framework that the CAISO has put forward that's going to be, I think, part of the discussion of the stakeholder process, if that goes forward, are the limitation of mitigation to real time, at least initially, the proposal to mitigate only internal units, and third, this the principle that mitigation will apply only when the system is transmission constrained or import constrained, and I think the process will work through exactly what import constrained means. So to take those in order, the mitigate in real time was something that if you followed the earlier MSC discussions of this and other stakeholder discussions, there was a lot of back and forth about what this really means. It is something, to our knowledge, that isn't really done in any other two-settlement framework where you mitigate only the real-time market. But as we dug more and more into some of the details of what mitigation in IFM the day ahead would look like, it became clear that there were a lot of policy and design issues that would have to be worked through, how to define demand, how to deal with virtual bidding, certain import RA questions, a lot of things that were fairly involved, and I don't feel like I know the answers to a lot of those issues. And so it did not seem like this was going to be a quick implementation, and weighed against that is the fact that the IFM itself may look pretty different in 2 or 3 years if the EIM is expanded to the IFM. And so those points seem to weigh in favor of at least starting with the real time, with this idea of taking the current EIM framework and applying something analogous to it to California. As Ben said, it may not, mitigate all of the day-ahead market power, but we do believe it would have some effect and would be more straightforward to implement on a lot of different dimensions. So we do support that at least as the phase one sort of objective. Secondly, mitigating only internal units, I think most everyone saw that there were issues with mitigating non-resource adequacy imports because they are free to just not offer into California anyways. So the question is, what does it mean to mitigate RA imports? And that does raise a bunch of both mechanical questions about what their bids, the format of those bids, the timing, and it also raises questions about how RA is measured and enforced with regards to imports that we felt like, among other things, should be the focus of some RA-level discussions before we get into how we're mitigating them. So I think a lot of the issues with imports are need to be dealt with in the RA context at least first. And then third was this the question about whether we're mitigating only when the system is constrained. There's really two arguments here, from my perspective at least. One is kind of the high-level competition policy conceptual justification of all of this. And the idea behind local market power mitigation was that there were certain times where structurally the market was really severely vulnerable to market power and there weren't other solutions to that problem that could be dealt with through, for example, forward contracting or entry or other types of solutions. And it's just not clear that that is an issue when we think about the entire WEC as a market. And if we're mitigating the California system absent transmission congestion, it is implicitly or explicitly saying that the WEC as a whole is not competitive. There doesn't seem to be a finding certainly supporting that, and we don't have a lot of visibility as to what's going on outside the WEC. So at that conceptual level, there's some questions. I think also from a practical perspective, however, there's just a real concern that if, for example, there was mitigation applied just when there was pivotal conditions of some kind in the real-time bid stack absent transmission congestion, I think there's a real question as to whether there would be a lot of mitigation in a lot of hours where it's not needed. And, you know, remember, that would apply to all the units in the state then. And so that opens up a bunch of, I think, important areas for discussion, such as what's the right RSI to use. And as we highlight in the opinion, issues about how we deal with the net buyer, net seller sort of distinction, which is a very binary, blunt one in the current framework, and at least economic theory argues that it should be treated with much more nuance. And then lastly, this issue of who should get mitigated if a pivotal condition is detected. Should it just be pivotal suppliers or should it be everyone? I think all of those things should be kind of part of a design, especially if we were going to move to a policy in which we're going to be mitigating in the absence of transmission congestion. So that's sort of a high-level summary. There are other justifications behind it, but those are sort of the arguments behind the support for those three elements. And I will stop there. There are a bunch of other design choices that are more difficult. Many of them have to do with an IFM-level implementation. Some don't, that will have to be worked through either in a phase one or phase process. So,
okay. Thank you, Jim. Really fleshed things out there. Well, thanks. So, Scott, would you like to add anything to that discussion and or discuss what you found in your Appendix A analysis?
Sure. I'll just maybe expand a little bit on one element of what Jim said, which is that we think everybody, we pointed out in Section 4 and talked about at the MSC meeting, and as Jim said, that everybody needs to be conscious of how often the system market power might trigger because of the changes when we go to system market power and because of changes in the CAISO market. And although we went through discussions of whether net virtual supply or any virtual supply should be included in asking the prospective, you know, the retrospective question of how competitive is the market, we know that when we use this to trigger mitigation, as we do in local market power mitigation, we have to only include the cleared virtual supply, the cleared net virtual supply, but you can't allow people to circumvent the mitigation by submitting lots of $1,000 virtual supply bids. And that will continue to be the case for system market power. But one thing that's going to be different for system market power is we're going to have the same issue with respect to imports, that if people could submit lots of $1,000 import bids, that would circumvent the application of market power. So you can see that when you get into the discussion of how do we do this, we're going to have a rule that limits the import bids that are used in the calculation of the pivotality to those that clear. And those two changes are just going to make the trigger that we use for triggering mitigation much more strict than the way we looked at it when we were analyzing competition in the preliminary stakeholder discussion. And then, as Jim said, the third change that's going to happen, which we need to consider, is that we have a potential for some of the large investor-owned utilities to shift from net buyers to very small net sellers. and their incentives aren't going to change at all, but the PSI could change dramatically. It to the point where we're triggering it in thousands of hours. So those are things we need to consider, and DMM and the CAISO need to provide the stakeholders with some information about what they're getting into and what the scope of those changes is as we get in the stakeholder process, so that everybody understands that element when they're making other choices. Another element that's related to this is that if we use the design in which in the IFM in which we test pivotality against the ISO's load forecast, LSEs that underbid both their load and their supply in the day ahead market will tend to depress the RSI and trigger mitigation, even though nothing has changed as far as competition. So all of those things are complications that we will have to talk about in the stakeholder process. It'll trade off with other choices. Jim and Ben already talked about our observations about the analysis in Appendix A. I guess the couple things I want to add are first to thank Guillermo a great deal for a lot of effort he put into to give us data that we needed for the analysis on multiple occasions and going back, and then beyond the data, helping us understand what was happening on particular days. And similarly, we want to thank the Department of Market Monitoring for providing us with the hourly data on their markup calculations and their RSI calculations, and also for answering questions about methodology, data, and so forth. So all that, without their Guillermo and DMM's efforts, there wouldn't be any Appendix A, because all of it is derivative work based on on their fundamental data that they provided. And I think we've talked about much of this and the analysis on August 18, 2019, and we've, with Guillermo's help, filled in some of the gaps in the days we analyzed, and with DMM's help, we resolved some issues with the initial data set, but the analysis is fundamentally the same, that we do see a lot of hours with low RSIs, as Jim and Ben said, but many of those hours have over token level of estimated markups. On the other hand, the analysis is based on holding the unit commitment fixed. It doesn't take account of potential inflated commitment cost offers, which DMM analysis for 2019, when it's complete, likely will, and will provide us with additional information. As we noted in the discussion on August 19th, in addition to the low level of markups in a lot of hours, makes it hard to draw conclusions, because just the nature of the many of the, so almost all the hours with markups are also hours with very, very tight gas markets and high gas prices. It's hard to tell the difference between the exercise of market power or just the fact that market participants have to make guesses about what price they're going to be able to buy gas at in a tight gas market after the IFM posts. And the methodology of using the lower of the offer that was used to clear the IFM or the DEB potentially creates differences in clearing prices even in a perfectly competitive market. So there's more analysis that can be done, and look at some of these hours with large differences, and as Jim talked about, do some more structural analysis of looking at the specific entity that made the offers that were higher than the DEB in the hour in which we have a significant difference. Was that actually made by an entity with a net seller with a lot of supply, or was it made by some other entity that actually was not a large net supplier but did have a gas-fired resource? So there's more that could be done to draw stronger inferences about whether we have a competitive issue that needs to be addressed, which factors into how urgently the CAISO should implement it in the IFM and make other changes. So that's the end of my comments, Ben.
All right. Thanks very much, Scott and Jim. So at this point, operator, we'd like to open up the lines in case there are any questions or comments from those who are listening.
As a reminder, please dial #2 on your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question or make a comment. We do have one caller in queue.
Great.
Three, actually.
Okay.
I'll open the first line.
Hey, this is Michelle Keita with the CPUC. I have a bunch of questions and comments. So my first question is, Scott Harvey was talking about the fact that this might overbind due to looking only at clear bids, looking at the fact that the IOUs might be net sellers, and folks that underbid loads. But I also understand that the proposal on the table really only binds when there's import congestion on all three lines. So do you really think it's going to overbind given that those two conditions have to be met?
No, Michelle. I think we made it clear in the opinion that using the import trigger would reduce the incidence of those factors a great deal. But it would be something for market participants to consider if they were going to not have an import trigger.
Okay, got it. Thanks. So then the
Sorry, Michelle. I was just going to add that, you know, I think the idea of whether it should be three interties or two or some other definition of congestion should definitely be examined more carefully in the stakeholder process. So
okay, Okay, so the other thing is that I know you looked primarily at 2018, and that was during the time that the OFO penalties were in effect. But one of the things is that this started to occur in 2017 when we weren't having those tight gas conditions, and that it was the importers that were primarily bidding up along the curve. So did you also look at 2017? Because I think maybe 2018 might just be a separate issue, not the one we were initially concerned about.
So the I think the answer is we just looked at 2018, which is the same periods of time that were looked at by DMM and the ISO. Yeah, the more the wider range of conditions you look at, the better. That's true. But Scott,
no, that's correct. But Michelle, you were referring to imports in 2017 or suppliers? I wasn't quite clear what you were asking about.
Oh, so what I was saying that was when we had some high prices that occurred in 2017, if you looked at the bid stack and saw who was bidding up on the curve, it was often the imports that were bidding high up. So it was sort of a hockey stick curve, and on the end of the hockey stick, it was a lot of the importers.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about that, Michelle, in the opinion that we think that the high offers, the $1,000 offers by the RA import suppliers are an issue, but it's not clear to us that that's a market power issue as opposed to a resource adequacy requirement issue, because the issue I don't think the issue is that those sellers are trying to raise prices in California by offering their supply at high prices. I think the issue is they don't have any supply to offer, and they're offering it $1,000 because they've got none, and that's not market power.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah, I definitely read that in your comments. And then so you guys do say that that should be the focus of the RA context. So tell me how one would solve that other than making the resources resource specific.
One way would be to make it resource specific. Another would be to require them to offer at some price far enough below the $1,000 cap that if they couldn't deliver, they'd lose a lot of money. Right now, if you offered $1,000, you can't lose anything because the worst thing that happened in real time is it got 1,000. If they had to offer at 500, then when it went to 800 or 700 or 900, they'd lose a lot of money and they'd perhaps be, you know, have a real resource that they could call on.
Okay, and then, so I'm not really familiar with the Eastern market, but I know FERC is very, they're very protective of their jurisdiction. Do you think they would have an issue with us telling somebody how they have to bid?
I think in an RA requirement, you could require them to offer it below a floor. And, and the third approach would be to have, you know, more shortage pricing in California so the price could go above $1,000 when we're short. I mean, that's how the Eastern markets address that issue. That you can, if you bid at 1,000, the price can go to, you know, 3,000 or 4,000.
Right, but if they don't have any supply and the price goes to 2,000 and they bid at 2,000, that doesn't really help us, right?
No, but they have a bid cap, but shortage pricing allows the price to go higher than the bid cap. So they can only bid at 1,000, but...
But that would require them to have to perform, right?
Well, or lose a lot of money. I mean, you know, it's been the same for virtual suppliers. Virtual suppliers offered at 800 or 900 have a good deal because it can't go more higher than 1,000. Whereas in other markets, you know, they can offer at 700, but it could go to 1,500.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks. So then, I just wanted to understand your support for the stakeholder initiative. Is your support for the elements that CAISO has proposed and you've evaluated them, or is your support, this is we think the best idea that one could come up with?
So I think that some of you supported initiating the process and were positively inclined towards those three elements, which is do it just in the real time, at least initially, do it just in the ISO footprint, mitigate just in the ISO footprint, and then only when the ISO is import constrained. I won't say that that's a hard and fast and final opinion, but that's where we're at the moment.
But did you consider, for example, PG&E's suggestion, which is the mitigation is very loose, but the conditions might be tighter, something like that?
I think we're open to, you know, alternative ideas that will be discussed in the proceeding. That's for sure. So this is our, I could say this is our firm and unswerving opinion for the moment, and it might change tomorrow. Is that helpful?
Okay.
But we're open
helpful.
To other ideas that, that other folks might have given in stakeholder comments or might come up in the proceeding to come.
Okay. So I guess my issue is that in few other stakeholder processes, do we set up the guardrails on what we're going to discuss, right? So, for example, in the extended day-ahead market, we don't say, well, here's the design that we're going to implement, and we like it, and this is all we are going to discuss. So I guess what I'm concerned about is putting up the guardrails now for a discussion that I think should allow for other ideas to be brought to the table and considered. So I guess maybe there's not really any comment. That's just my final comment.
I would personally agree that it's good to consider a wide range. Even if there's an inclination in one direction, the other should be seriously considered and compared.
I would agree with that, although, you know, there's got to be some bounds or else we could be talking for a decade.
I agree, but on the other hand, I don't think in very many stakeholder processes do we set the bounds at the very beginning. That's all. Like, you know, we allow for movement. For example, the Flex product has changed dramatically over the course of time. So anyway, okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle. Operator, you said there were a couple other people on the line.
Yes, there are. I'll move to the next caller. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, it's Mark with Calpine. First of all, thanks for this. 47 pages, it seems to me, is a record. I don't know. And I did, Ben, make it through last night without naps. So thank you. I think it seems the bottom line is, and it's understandable, you looked at 18, you didn't find any significant exercise of market power. The few hours that you saw price markups above, I think you've identified key factors that could have influenced that. But you recognize that there's a growing concern that things are changing. I get that. One of the things, though, that you've talked about also is the possibility that putting this in prematurely in some way could result in false positives, I think is what Jim said. So I'd like you all to discuss the downsides of over-mitigation, if you would, just for a minute. What would be the problems that could occur because of false positives?
Lots of them, and we've discussed them, of course, in many opinions over the last 10 years. So We can go around the table. One, of course, is misestimation of variable costs, opportunity costs, especially under the volatile gas conditions, which are going to happen precisely when you might be the system is stressed. And likewise, as we discussed in the DEB proceedings for hydro this last year, opportunity costs, especially for large storage units, are particularly troublesome. And if you have a false positive, you set the DEB to a level under the cost, then you can get some real inefficiencies, as we've seen in the past within the ISO. In the short run, in terms of how things are dispatched. In the long run, of course, you might be scaring away supply from the California markets. So that's one major reason.
Another consideration is just that when we mitigate across the entire state, if we've got the gas price wrong, the impact on California gas markets will be much worse than if we get it wrong in one part of the state. That we'll suck in too much gas in that part. The prices will probably get set at the right level by the offers in another part of the state, so the overall price won't be depressed too much relative to outside. But if we're mitigating all the prices in the state, because we have a trigger that, you know, every Monday we trigger mitigation, and every Monday we, you know, half the time the price is too low or too high, The impact is going to be greater, I think, when we're applying mitigation across the state than just in the areas that are congested. The other issue is going to be that when we have the local market power mitigation, a lot of the hydro resources are outside the constrained areas, so they're not going to be impacted all the time. So it's crucial to get the offers right. But if we're applying system market power mitigation, we mitigate the offers of every resource in the state, there's be a lot less slack for getting the offers wrong, and especially if it's thousands of hours a year, it's really going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, at a high level, there's just there are inefficiencies that come up if you're artificially constraining one unit to look cheaper than it really is, and not other units. I think the consequences are maybe becoming more. The task is both becoming more difficult, and the consequences perhaps more severe when we start thinking about more storage, energy limited kind of alternative resources, where we might be using up storage energy too quickly or in the wrong times because of mitigation, and just the general sorts of misallocation of resources that come out if you're getting the costs wrong.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
And then, to be fair, those are the same issues we worry about when there's a lot of market power too. And so, you know, there's inefficiencies that arise on both sides. But it shouldn't be thought of that mitigation is sort of a costless tool.
Okay, Mark. Thank you. Anything?
Thanks, Ben.
Okay, operator, is there a third caller?
There is another caller in queue. Please go ahead.
Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Ben and Jim and Scott. It's Brian Thaker with Middle River. Thanks for 47 pages of scintillating reading fun. I managed to get through it all as well. So I guess a couple of comments, some directed at you, but also some directed at the ISO folks that I know are listening in. First, I thought the observation of 20 hours with the high price cost markup in 2018 correlated strongly to high gas price hours, that thanks for putting that out there in a very strong way. And clearly, my former employer experienced all the fun around the ISO's inability to get real-time or same-day gas prices into their markets. But I think that your inference, or I should say your conclusion, that the gas prices bear a strong connection to this whole issue was well-received. I guess I also want to – my question is, with regard to the analysis you hint at on page 36, where you'd be looking at, you know, who submitted those high bids, and were they all affiliated with SoCalGas? You seem to kind of tee up whether somebody is going to do that analysis. I guess my question is to the ISO folks, could you do that? It doesn't seem like it would be incredibly complex analysis, but since it's teed up in the paper, I think it would be interesting to see the results of that. So those are my comments. Thanks much for the paper and the opportunity to comment.
So, Brian, don't run too quick. So where precisely in page 36 I'm looking under table 6?
Yeah, the middle paragraph that begins a further test, Ben.
A further test.
Yeah, okay. This is the question of who's bidding, you know, the identity or the incentive structure of the firms that are bidding. If you see a big difference between one set of bids and another, that's or if everybody sort of seems to be bidding as if the gas price is a certain level, that's one way to try to shed some light on this question.
Served by the same gas pipeline. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also just if people are, remember we talked about the fact that you're submitting these bids for the gas you're going to have to buy later in the day, and while you know what it was trading at in the morning, you don't know how tight it's going to get later in the day or what it's going to cost you if you have to buy a lot later in the day. So this might be just, you know, different offers of different people with different estimates of what it's going to cost them. And if it's not just all the big sellers, then you might think this is more likely to be just, you know, the fact that the gas price is uncertain and people are making their best judgment.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. And just to beat this horse one more time, I think that the uncertainty around what same-day gas prices are going to be and how much you're going to have to buy, especially across the weekend, you know, really factors into how folks look at the market. So kudos for drawing that point out. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Brian. And so, operator, do we have anybody else in the queue?
At this time, there is no one else in queue.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so now we'll move to the vote, and I entertain a motion to adopt the opinion.
I move to adopt the opinion.
Moved by,
I second the motion.
Moved by Dr. Bushnell, second by Dr. Harvey. Any comments or changes, corrections that the folks want to raise at this time?
No.
It's got to be a typo there somewhere.
Probably,
sure,
but
there
I haven't
is.
Found it yet.
Okay. All right. If there's no comments or corrections at this point, then I'll go ahead and roll call of votes. So, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. Scott?
Yes.
And I vote yes. So the opinion on system market power mitigation has been adopted unanimously by the Market Surveillance Committee of the California ISO. And finally, just to check to see if there's anybody has any other business. And if not, look forward to seeing everybody Friday, December 6th. Which I believe is Sinterklaas Day in the Netherlands. So I hope somebody shows up dressed as Kris Kringle. So we'll see everybody in December. Thank you very much for reading the opinion and for the questions that we got. This will conclude the call. Operator, we can now disconnect the call.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.